Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Hello and welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. It's Wednesday, my favorite day of the week. How are you guys doing? I hope you guys are doing well. I'm just sitting here doing my show, listening to the storm outside. It's raining. It's typical for our weather here in August and September. Today I have a great show. I have self-proclaimed spiritual activist Sarah Webb with me, and she's going to join me in just a few moments. For my regulars who listen every week, thank you guys so much. I love hearing your feedback, and I so appreciate you joining me every week and being here with me. It means everything. You have no idea. But for those of you who are tuning into my show for the first time, welcome. I'm so appreciative that you have found me. A little bit about me. I am also an author, and my book is titled Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams. And I'm also a photographer, so there are photographs in my book and all the photographs I took. And in the book, there's 30 manifesting stories that I took of the contributors manifesting postcards. And I include a whole bunch of writing exercises, and it helps us get clear on what we want to manifest. And there's a toolbox full of fun exercises on how to manifest career, health, money, love, and so much more, right? Because we always want to bring more of the good stuff into our life. So I'm just going to read a short excerpt from my book about relationships. We are in relationships with everything and everyone around us. Desiring harmonious and loving relationships is a very common desire that we all have. We want to enjoy being with people we love. We want them to enjoy being with us. If you are around someone who makes you anxious and nervous and irritates you, take a moment to look at that. Where is it affecting you? What emotion is it bringing up in you? Where are you holding it in your body? This is very important because we are being given an opportunity to see in ourselves where we are wounded. The best way to have healthy relationships is to heal our own internal wounds. What happens after we heal is our relationships shift and change. There will be those people who will fall away because you don't match energetically any longer. There will be those people who now keep a respectful distance, and you will wish each other well but are no longer close. Then there will be those that shift to a higher vibration with you. You will help be the catalyst for their own growth alongside of you. New people will come into your life who match you energetically. Remember, everything vibrates energetically, and we are a magnet for those things that match us. What happens as we discover more about ourselves and our journey is we all have wounds that we carry, and the best advice I can give anyone is do whatever you have to do to heal those wounds. The more you love yourself, the better your relationships in general will be. The more secure you are with who you are, the less you will be triggered by what others say and do. A very common self-limiting belief a majority of us have is, I am not good enough, or I am not worthy. Everything stems from this affirmation. If you carry this story around you, you will manifest this in your life, especially in relationships. Your relationships will keep showing you that you are not good enough. You aren't worthy of having a healthy, loving, romantic relationship or any relationship. I have been there myself. Of course, I didn't know it when I was in it. Later, much later, after doing inner work and getting help from programs and coaching, I shifted that dynamic. Learning to be with yourself and loving your own company has tremendous rewards. You get to really know yourself inside and out. You know what you will no longer tolerate in relationships. It's very empowering. Many people jump from one unhealthy relationship to another unhealthy relationship because they cannot be alone or with their own company. One of the greatest gifts you can give yourself is loving yourself and honoring and enjoying your own company. So if you're interested in more and you want to do some inner work exercises and reading people's incredible journeys of transformation, inspiration, and manifesting, check out my book, Postcards to the Universe. You can find it online or in bookstores. And of course, I'm always asking for people to keep sending me manifesting postcards. If you want to know what that is, go to postcardstotheuniverse.com and it shows you how to make a manifesting postcard and where to send it. And if you're on Facebook, you can join me in my public Facebook group, Postcards of Love, where we share uplifting posts. Next week, I have Dr. Alan Weiser. He runs a pain management practice, and he has an extensive background in working with the psychological problems people face when they are living with complex and chronic pain. By focusing on collaborative, realistic goals and practices, his practice has provided support that empowered chronic pain patients to transform from dysfunction and disability to empowerment and recovery. So join me next week for that show. It'll be really interesting, especially if you've been dealing with some chronic pain issues. All right, so now to get to my really interesting guest today, Sarah Maya Webb. She's an author, an inspirational speaker, and a self-proclaimed spiritual activist dedicated to leading an intentional life and her mission of healing the world, one person at a time. Sarah speaks of the power we each have inside of ourselves by weaving pertinent neuroscience and body chemistry into her stories of survival. Her book, Look Lush, is a collection of poetry outlining her rise from the ashes after a multi-man rape, coming out of the closet and getting sober and healing addiction through the power within ourselves in conjunction with nature. To find out more about Sarah, you could go to her website, sarahwebbsays.com. That's Sarah, S-A-R-A-W-E-B-B, says, S-A-Y-S.com. Welcome, Sarah. Thanks so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Melissa.
I'm really excited to talk with you. So usually I have people talk a little bit about their history and their background and what inspires them to do the kind of work that they're doing today, because from your bio alone, obviously you've had some stuff happen in your life. So I'm going to assume that caused you to do some healing to get yourself where you are, because now you help other people. So can you share a little bit about that?
Thank you so much, Melissa. I've always been a healer. It's just that I needed to start within my own self. Mm-hmm. And healing does require injury. And like you, I know, and science tells us, that everything vibrates energetically. Everything is energy. Mm-hmm. And that we attract where we need to heal, and that these shadow versions of ourselves, because everything's one, right? Everything's coming from source mm-hmm. energy, is showing up in our lives to show us the places where we need to heal, whether you believe that's from a past life or a this life trauma. You know, trauma started for me very early. And I can say today that I am so grateful for the intense traumas, with a capital T, that I have suffered, survived from, and I am now thriving in forgiveness. I live in forgiveness. The people who perpetrated me, starting from an early age, somebody very close in my family, I experienced sexual trauma between the ages of 1 and 3.
Oh my God.
And then I continued to perpetrate that in my life when I was raped by several men 14 years ago. And I have done the work, and I had to begin with myself. I was drinking because I was gay, and I had to have alcohol in order to be intimate with men. So I'm so grateful for that opportunity to heal and to share the gift of meditation, because it is the power of meditation, which we all have within ourselves. I believe that that connects us to the unified field of all possibility, what quantum physics postulates as the unified field. You could call that God with a capital G or a lowercase g or source energy, but there's so much creativity and possibility in that space. And it's really, it's connecting with our divinity. And if you want to put it in scientific terms, it's connecting with our subconscious. Because the majority of the information that we are processing all day long, in fact, 99.96% of it is being processed by our subconscious,
right,
not our conscious. So when we get into those lower level frequency brainwaves, we can actually access that subconscious information that sits in there.
Yeah. Well, what you said, something you say, I live in forgiveness, and that really struck me because obviously the trauma that you had is severe trauma, PTSD. It was very powerful to say that you're grateful and you live in forgiveness. So for those that are listening that have suffered similar circumstances and live in bitterness and anger, and how did you get to that space of gratitude and forgiveness and not let it destroy you, really? Because it could have, you know, coming from that, that's something that could easily destroy somebody.
Well, I think I was on the way to destruction through self-medication, through the numbing power of alcohol.
Right.
Alcohol is a very powerful sedative. And it didn't happen all at once. It happened incrementally. I started meditating for 20 minutes twice a day 6 years ago. The first kind of meditation that I ever did was through the practice of yoga, moving meditation. And then when I would lie in or lay in the savasana, the corpse pose at the end, they would lead us through these meditations. And that's what piqued my interest. But for a long time, I didn't find a regular meditation practice. It took a lot of years and a lot of different false starts in order to find the kind of meditation that worked for me. And meditation gives us that little pause between stimulus and response. It gives that what they call the 30,000 foot view, where you can not be so mired in your life, but see it more like you would be watching a movie, where you can still have emotions and still be involved, but not be so swept away by it. So as I began my regular meditation practice of 20 minutes, two times a day, I started to cultivate that witnessing where we are kind of seeing our life from the outside. And I realized that anger or any of those emotions that you mentioned, bitterness, jealousy, but they say that anger is like, and resentment especially, because anger is just like, I mean, sorry, resentment is just little packets of anger that have been condensed and just solidified, calcified. Anger is like drinking poison and expecting somebody else to die.
Yes, I have heard that.
We can see this like with a really beautiful analogy. Let's say you're driving in the car and somebody cuts out in front of you, or maybe they do something on the, they're on their cell phone and they're not driving forward, and you're compartmentalized in the different cars, right? So the person who is doing this violation against you is oblivious or inane, or maybe they have bad periphery vision, or maybe they really need to, maybe they're incredibly old. I mean, I live in Florida. There's a lot of old drivers.
Right.
It doesn't matter what it is about this person who's quote unquote angering you, which there's a fallacy there because we choose our responses. It doesn't matter the reason. You're compartmentalized in your car and you getting angry, the only person that is experiencing that adrenaline and cortisol and all those emotions is you. That person who has foresight, or maybe is on the way to see their wife deliver the baby and they're in a hurry, that person is going along their merry way with zero consequences to their physicality, to their central nervous system, and they are free. Whereas the person who's getting angry is trapped, and it's their physicality, their nervous system that's being pounded by these emotions, which are not serving us. Right. So I began the healing work in order to release myself, because those men who did mm-hmm. that to me 14 years ago are more mm-hmm. than likely not living in fear or shame or mm-hmm. regret. Mm-hmm. It was only me who was
wow.
deluding myself.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that you could say you're free, but you're right. There's a good possibility that they're not. And, you know, the ego part of you says, maybe it's just me, I'm the Italian, the Sicilian comes out of me. Well, they should pay. You know what I mean? Like, there's always that little part of you that says that, and that's holding on to the injustice, right? So we're still keeping that in our bodies. But you've gotten to a place where you could say, I can only take care of myself and heal myself. I can't worry about whatever their karma is and whatever they need to live out. That's for the universe to take care of, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I learned this lesson very early on. I mm-hmm. had someone who stole from me in second grade, stole an item from me. And I worked through it all. Of course, I told my parents and I told mm-hmm. the teacher, but there was nothing that I could do about it. And I didn't know the word karma back then.
Right, right.
But I worked through that on my own, that there's absolutely nothing that me getting angry or wanting retribution is going to do. That is for that person to carry in their own energetic field. They've mm-hmm. paid their karmic debt. They've sowed their seeds, rather, and they're going to reap from their actions. And so me getting angry about it or seeking retribution, mm-hmm. right, that's just another ripple of retribution yeah. that's going out from my energetic sphere. So when we lean into the forgiveness aspect, which first mm-hmm. we have to forgive ourselves, because, I mean, come on, how many times have you stolen time from yourself?
Sure. All the time. Yeah.
Have you lied to yourself?
Let's hold that thought, because we can really get into this. So, because I see that we're already up to the first break. So let's take our break real quick and then we'll talk more about this. Stay tuned, everybody. Be right back. Hi, I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on Om Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives. Welcome back. So if you're just joining me, I have author, inspirational speaker, and spiritual activist Sarah Webb on my show. And Sarah, right before the break, I'm sorry I had to cut you off, but we were talking about leaning into forgiveness. And that's what you have been doing. And you talk about the power of meditation and how that helped you. So yeah, what do you mean by leaning into forgiveness?
I think a lot of people feel like they've got to begin with forgiving other people, but mm-hmm. really it begins with self-forgiveness. Just like mm-hmm. we can't attract the relationship, no matter how many postcards to the universe we write, mm-hmm. we've got to mm-hmm. include ourselves, right? We've got to begin with loving ourselves in order to really feel true love. Because, you know, we see in other people what we see in ourselves. That's the nature of our minds. That's the nature of projection. So when we lean into forgiveness for ourselves by turning within, mm-hmm. and accepting ourselves for exactly who we are as flawed, perfect individuals, which sounds like an oxymoron, right? Mm-hmm. But we are perfect just as we are. And I think that's one of the paradoxes of spiritual growth. It's this radical self-acceptance while at the same time, a quiet striving for excellence. We want to grow, we want to get better, but it's also saying, I am good enough. Just like you said in the beginning of your show, it's so common to feel unworthy. Mm-hmm. That's usually how, and I talk about this a lot on my Instagram page, you know, it's oftentimes I'm not good enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not successful enough, I'm not old enough, I'm not young enough, I'm not loud enough, I'm not quiet enough, I'm not skinny enough. It's all these not enough. And that is rooted in not feeling worthy. Right. But I think that's just part of the human condition. And the reason why we're here is to help the human collective and by extension, the entire collective of the universe, this universal consciousness that we're able to tap into in meditation to heal by accepting ourselves exactly as we are. And by understanding that everything that happens in our life is happening for us, not to us. It's just like they say that smooth seas do not make for strong sailors. I mean, there's a reason why. If we go on a more strenuous walk than we did the day before, what happens to our muscles? They literally get ripped open. And then they heal and get stronger. They get better. So it's such a paradox because all growing up, you know, we're given tests and quizzes and we see all over, I don't watch television, but you see these challenges on quote unquote reality television. We so readily accept that challenges are how we succeed. But then when something challenging happens, oh, I can't do that. Oh, this is too much for me. I even see it in the spiritual community that people are like, oh, there's all these energies and Mercury's in retrograde. And sure, yeah, these big magnetic energetic bodies absolutely affect us. But the challenge is really an opportunity. It's an opportunity to show the power of source, which we all have inside of us. And it just takes getting quiet in order to actually hear it. I mean, all day long, we tell our bodies what to do. Drive the car, make the breakfast. What about listening? Because our bodies, and I alluded to this, so all around us at every single moment, there's billions of bits of data available to us as humans. And even though the human brain and body is pretty fantastic, it's still not capturing all the billions of bits. Our brains and our bodies are capturing around 11 million bits per second.
Oh my gosh.
Which is, it's pretty phenomenal.
It's crazy.
Right? 11 million bits of data per second. But here's the rub. We're only conscious of between 40 and 50 of those 11 million bits per second.
Oh my
Not 40 or 50,000.
Right.
We're conscious of on average 45 out of the 11 million bits per second. And sure, some percentage of that is just what's happening physically. Like we're not thinking about breathing right now. A lot of our autonomic nervous system is handling that for us. But especially when we're around people, there are energetic vibrations that we're picking up on. So 0.04% of reality is available to us consciously. The other 99.96% is being processed by our subconscious. Now, I'll give you one more statistic and then I'll tie them together. Even though we have five senses and 11 million sensory receptors in our bodies, a staggering 10 million out of the 11 million sensory receptors are related directly to our sight.
To our sight, so, to what we see.
Yes, exactly. So even though we have five senses, the vast majority are dedicated to our sight. So
I love learning new things. I love learning new things. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So if we just shut off 10 million of our 11 million sensory receptors by simply closing our eyes, then we can go inside of our bodies because our bodies are processing that 99.96% of information. And right. that effectively gets us out of the beta brainwave, which we all live in constantly, and down into alpha and theta. And these are the first stages of sleep, and theta is where a lot of healing happens. So when we practice meditation, which is just that, right? It's a practice. It's not meditation perfection. It's right. not a meditation performance. I think a lot of people are kind of scared of meditation or shy away from it and feel like they can't do it or they don't want it. They make an excuse, but it's such a magical place where we can actually access our subconscious, access that unified field of all information and all creativity just by listening to this information that our bodies have. I mean, sometimes I'll just like sit down with kind of a question like, oh, okay, I know that I need to heal this deep trauma that I've suffered. Mm-hmm. Let me just sit down, close my eyes, focus on my breathing or just focus on my heart or just listen to my body and say, what are some other times that I've heard people in my life or fantastic radio programs on All Time or other podcasts where I have heard people talk about the way that they went about healing that trauma. And when we get quiet enough, that information has the opportunity to bubble up. Some people might relate to this. Some people, when they are very stressed, they want to go drive or they want to go like refinish a boat or they want to go like clean the house, wash dishes. The reason why we're drawn to this is because when we do these kind of rote activities, that's when our subconscious mind takes over. Mm-hmm. We actually slip straight from beta brainwave down into theta. So we skip the alpha, which is common meditation, straight down into theta. And because we're not having to think about driving or whatever it is, showering, washing the dishes. You ever notice like you're in the shower and you're like, oh man, I need a pen. I've got to write this down. I have a great idea. Like, a book.
All the time.
How to solve a problem. Well, that's the magic of the brain. And so if that's happening with our eyes open, think about the power of closing the eyes and making meditation a practice. I mean, the other day I actually was meditating in the morning. This was a few weeks ago. And I had this friend of mine come up in my subconscious and I thought, oh, I need to reach out to her. And she said, I was thinking about you this morning during my meditation too, but we didn't see one another until that night. We were at this conscious dance party. I'm like, oh my gosh, I was going to reach out to you. And she's like, so was I. I was thinking it's like we connected in that space. And now we've got a partnership going and we're doing all this, you know, we are both working in the healing sexual trauma space. So there's just so much opportunity in that healing space to heal ourselves and to do good in the world, which is, you know, which is what I'm passionate about.
So that's why I don't need to ask you why meditation is so important, because you just answered the question. But it's funny that you said that because I like to organize things. And I noticed that's when I'm organizing, if I'm taking out a drawer, I'm organizing clothes, it puts me in, I feel like it's a very meditative practice for me. I like it. Yeah, I get into that space. So it's interesting that you said that, like driving or cleaning or washing dishes. Yeah, because it's so rote, you don't think about it and your subconscious takes over. So you use meditation to help you heal. So so healing sexual trauma, meditation is obviously very powerful in helping heal that. Yes?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what kind of trauma it is. Trauma with a capital T, trauma with a lowercase I mean, I was in the eye of Hurricane Katrina and category 5 hurricane. And
I
know that's kind of a decade and a half ago, but I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of trauma it was, whether it happened in childhood or if it's some sort of a current PTSD, meditation has been proven time and time again to help people actually heal completely from PTSD. It resets the nervous system in an instantaneous way. And it also helps us to be able to process our negative emotions over time. In fact, the amygdala in the brain is where we process sadness and a lot of anxiety. And in long-term meditators, even some who have meditated for only a few months, the amygdala shrinks. And areas of the brain that help us to be more open actually grow. So it causes physiological changes in our brain, which causes real changes in our lives, in our relationships. And so as I started that regular practice, it allowed me to, just like you opened the show with, you know, to no longer tolerate things and relationships in my life. I was in the closet because I was afraid of not being accepted by my parents. I was raised in the South. I was in church every single day, literally, because I went to school there. And I knew that I was a sin. I was a walking sin. And so I was afraid to come out. Even though I had lived as a gay person, I went back into the closet, like, after college, because I was afraid to be myself. And it allows that space. And it's not like everything happened at once, right? At first, I just saw my habit of drinking. And I started to change my relationship with alcohol. And when I started changing my relationship with alcohol, I realized that I needed it in order to be intimate with my now ex-husband. So it was this beautiful cascade of events. And then once I really got stable, in 2 days, I'll be 1,000 days sober. So almost 3 years off of
Congratulations. Off of
alcohol. Thank you. And I am a free person. So now that I have really stabilized that, then I was able to go in and do some really deep work with qualified therapists in order to heal this sexual trauma that occurred numerous times in my life. So meditation is the catalyst for all of it in my space. And it's not, you know, it's not going to solve everything in your life.
Sure, of course not.
It's not a magical pill.
Well, but we're here on a journey, so there's always learning lessons, right? Well, I imagine that now that you're living your life about from the perspective of who you truly are, that's very healing, because you were hiding before, and now you're no longer hiding. So that has to be very healing and powerful in and of itself.
That's right. I feel like I've finally stepped into my authenticity, and I'm still working on self-acceptance every day because my parents didn't come to my wedding. I'm now remarried to a wonderful woman, and we've been blending our families, and my parents still don't accept me for who I am. I have hope that healing is possible. And every single day I am working on accepting myself and accepting them, because really I have to accept them for who they are too, because they've got beliefs and convictions. So I just have to step into that space and allow them to be themselves, because me trying to change them is me doing the same thing to them that they're trying to do to me, which is just a self-perpetuating cycle, and it's not going to help anything.
No, it doesn't help anything. And I really believe deep down that every single soul on this planet just wants to be accepted and loved for who they are. Period. That's it. Doesn't matter anything else, whatever else you have going on. We all want the same thing. Like, this is me. This is who I am. See me, you know, accept me and love me for who I am. And that's all we have to do. And if we can do that, or at least, you know, show others that we do that for them, hopefully more and more people will start to come to that on their own, that I have to accept everyone for who they are and just let people be who they are.
Yeah, but it begins within, right?
It begins within. You have to accept yourself, right? Because that's the big caveat here, is a lot of times we don't accept ourselves for who we are, and we cause ourselves so much pain and anguish. And like I was talking about in the beginning, and you've been talking about, we're all connected to source and we're all one in energy. So what are we attracting? We're attracting back to us exactly what we're feeling inside, right? That keeps showing up, keeps showing up, keeps showing up, so that we can say, you know, I don't think this is the way to go anymore. let me go look at some different options out there to heal this that I have going on inside of me. But before, I have so much more that I want to talk about, and I know we're just going to be coming up to the 40 minute mark. So let's take our break now, and then I have so much more to ask you, Sarah. Stay tuned, everybody. Be right back. Welcome back. So, Sarah, before the break, we were talking about, God, so many things, you know, healing ourselves first. And you said that you got sober and you were also, you came out as gay. So did those things go hand in hand? What made you finally say, you know what, I have to get out of this marriage because this isn't who I am and live my authentic self? Did you do that all around the same time? Like, how did that play out?
Great question. Yeah, actually, my book is very aptly named Look Lush because it is an original collection of 55 poems. And the first 21 poems are part one, entitled Look. And that deals with the sexual trauma that we've talked about, looking inside. And it's very obtuse. It's, you know, there's not really much of a trigger warning there. It's really about the healing and about me looking at myself and going within in order to heal. And then the second part of the book is called Lush, and that's 34 poems. And in answer to your question, that is a simultaneous dealing with, because Lush has a few, it's not even a double entendre, it's a few different meanings, you know, something that's lush and green and overgrown, also something that's prolific, and it's also slang for somebody that drinks too much. So I came out of the closet, got a divorce, and got sober in the year of 2019. Not necessarily in that order, but it all happened within that year. And so Lust does have, there's more sultry poems because I started dating women again. And then I was 80-something days sober when quarantine hit in the United States. So I spent a lot of time in nature. So, you know, something that's very green, or like the ocean could be described as very lush, it's prolific, it's really beautiful. It's something you can immerse yourself in. And then, you know, you could talk about women as being very luscious. So those 34 poems are definitely more verbose and more lush, whereas Look can be very spare, as you might think. Poetry might be a lot simpler words, and Lush does have to do with all of that turmoil that I was experiencing a few years ago. And it isn't a linear thing, right? We start looking at ourselves, and even though Look comes first, that actually all transpired after I got sober and came out of the closet and started living as my authentic self. So I came out to my parents when I was 39, and I came out officially on social media when I was 40. I think that's not very many people who wait that long, especially, I feel like it's way more accepting these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, being raised in a society where it was not accepted, I was just always so afraid. And I shoved it so far down. It's just like, I knew that that was a part of me, and it's just like I knew that I had had that sexual trauma, but I didn't want to look at it. And it's so easy, especially in today's society, to distract and dissociate because we don't want to deal with it. We've got these screens everywhere, and now, of course, post-pandemic, we're back to doing events, and everything is so easy. It's so easy to just get lost in what's out here. But when we turn our eyes around and begin to look within, which is what meditation allows us to do, to actually look at our habits, it's that metacognition, thinking about our thinking, that meta living, thinking about the way that we're living. And that is my jam, is intentional living, to be intentional. I have a conscious relationship with my wife where we express to one another instead of sweeping it under the rug. You know, that's what I was taught in my family. Ignore it, sweep it under the rug, put another rug on top of it, and then maybe explode because there might be some alcohol involved. I was raised in New Orleans. You know, it's a lot of alcohol involved. It's very much part of the society. And, or, you know, I have chosen to stop those habits because that's what our lives are comprised of. We spend at least, like, even the most creative, eccentric, spontaneous person has at least 40% of their lives ruled by habit. And people who really, really like things the way that they like it, 80 to 90% of their lives are ruled by habit, which is why quarantine was so difficult for most of us, because we all of our little habits were disrupted. We couldn't go to the places that we wanted to go. We could see the places that we were normally used to seeing. So yeah, I'm really grateful for all of that.
So the last few years have been huge growing for you, it sounds like, since 2019. Was there a catalyst event? Like, did something, because I know many times people say they hit rock bottom before they did it, or there was like an event or something happened and all of a sudden they said, I can't do it anymore. I just can't. And then that's when the shift starts. Is that something that happened with you, or was it more of just, you know, you knew inside what you were feeling and you made that, you started to make the changes?
I was very drawn to meditation. So meditation is essentially the catalyst. However, in regards to the drinking itself, I was sober for the first time January 4, 2016, when I found out that I was pregnant with my daughter. And I noticed, I started recognizing that I was having this automatic thought at the end of the day about a glass of wine. It's like, I was like, I'm going to go have my, I'm not going to do that. So I just started recognizing, wow, I'm doing that every single day. And then when my daughter was about 18 months old, we went to a party and there was a little Mardi Gras looking cup. The universe was really sending me a really loud and clear message. And she picked it up and she said, this is my wine, because that was my drink of choice, was wine. Wow. And it hit me in the gut. I'm like, what am I showing my daughter? How am I emulating? You know, she's going to emulate what I am doing. What am I showing her to do? So I started trying to change my relationship with alcohol. I read Annie Grace. I read all these books about how to stop drinking. I thought I could educate myself sober. But it wasn't until I started, I'm so into learning. But it wasn't until I found a group of women locally that spoke my language, my proverbial language, where I, you know, there's this famous TED Talk that's almost 2 decades old. It was one of the first TED Talks. And he says, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. Because, you know, they've done testing on animals where they'll drink the cocaine water when they're in a cell by themselves. But when you put them around the other animals, they will choose to drink the fresh water. So we self-medicate when we feel like we're not being seen. And in my case, I was not seeing myself. I was the perpetrator. I was keeping myself in my own box. And it took meditation to really pay attention to what I was doing, to my habits. And then once I started noticing my habits, I started recognizing, I'm using this alcohol in order to numb myself, in order to be able to be intimate. Right. And then I started changing that relationship. And man, it's been a lot of growth. Yes.
I'm sure it has.
Now, I think it has been for everybody, right?
Yeah. It really has. The pandemic really did change a lot of things and shift a lot of things, that's for sure. Now, you talk about your mission. What is your mission?
I am intent. I mean, it's really my vision for the world, because it's borderline ludicrous. My vision is that every single person will meditate. I firmly believe that if everyone would meditate, we would not have the problems that we have. Deepak Chopra says that if we would just teach every 8-year-old to meditate, that we would achieve world peace in one generation. And I believe it.
I've heard that. I've heard that before. But it's interesting that you said that, because there's a show on, it's a true story. It's called 13 Lives. I think it's on Prime Video. Ron Howard directed it. It's a true story about the soccer team, the kids. I think it was in Thailand where they got stuck in the cave and they were in there for like something crazy, like 17 or 18 days or something just absolutely absurd. And the coach was trained in meditation. So how these kids got through it, he taught these kids as they're sitting, isolated, starving, in a cave, cold, scared, not knowing if they're going to live or die or see their parents again. That's the meditation. He had them meditate every day. And that's part of the reason that they think that these kids like survived. Isn't that unbelievable?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense because I know a lot about, I mean, that's fascinating. I'll have to check that out. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
We know what happens to our metabolism and our breathing rate. So, you know, if there's limited oxygen in the cave, and, you know, some people say it's like we've only got a certain number of breaths. And when we meditate, that slows our metabolic rate, it slows our heart, slows our digestive system, it slows our breathing. Mm-hmm. Even when we focus on our breath or do certain pranayama techniques. So that is genius. I'll have to check that out.
It's about how they were rescued. Yeah. But I remember thinking how these kids, and they were the coach was helping them. They meditated every day. That's how part of the reason that they survived. So now breath work, you said something about our breath. You also do breath work, right? But is breath work different from meditation, or do you include it in your meditation? Can you share a little bit about that?
Great question. Breathwork is a form of meditation. I'm a certified yoga teacher. I don't really teach so much yoga. I do retreats and stuff, but I sometimes incorporate breathwork into the meditations that I lead my personal clients through or my group coaching. Mm-hmm. It's a really powerful way to quiet the mind because it's something easy that we can latch onto. And really, they call that prana our life force. Because when we are first born, that's the first thing we get. And without it, we are a goner. We can survive, like you say, 17 days in a cave. We can survive for weeks without food, a few days without water, but only a few minutes without our breath.
Right.
When we connect to our life force, our breath, which when we get stressed, that's the first thing that goes. It's just away from our bodies because our bodies are ancient, this physiology that we've been gifted with over millennia. And when we used to have a fight or flight, a sympathetic nervous system activation, we needed to have blood out in our extremities. And so our lung capacity would be restricted to the top portion of our lungs. And then we'd be able to fight an invading tribe person or flee from a saber-toothed tiger.
Right.
But today, our stressors are traffic and our boss and our spouse and deadlines and our kids and yada, yada. And so we really need to be able to use the full capacity of our lungs. So one of the first things I teach all my clients is just how to breathe from your belly. Because when we have that fight or flight triggered in our bodies, we need to be able to use the full capacity of our lungs so we can use the full capacity of our brains so that our hearts can pump and we can actually think about a more enlightened response instead of that quick reaction, which is really something that comes from childhood or from trauma.
Right.
You know, we're actually triggered.
Right. Well, breathwork is a system of conscious breathing, right? That's what you help people do. Because I've heard this from others who practice is that so many of us, probably most of us, do a lot of shallow breathing. We're not breathing consciously at all. And how that affects our bodies.
Yes. Yeah, we oftentimes don't empty all of the air that we have. So it's really good. That's why exercise is really good for us. It makes us empty everything and then get a full new breath of air because our lungs will hold a certain amount of kind of like stale air. And so, yeah, pranayama, breathwork, just basic belly breathing. Everybody, no matter what kind of physical limitations you have, whether it's hypertension, it doesn't matter. Everybody can do belly breathing. So that's the first most basic thing that I always teach. I've even taught, you know, thousands of people on a stage when I'm doing my speaking. It's a little challenging to teach that many people how to belly breathe, but it is very, very powerful. And when I'm in a small group setting, they will report to me. They're like, wow, I feel like I can see better. I feel like I just feel more awake. I'm just more aware. Breath work is incredibly important. And without it, we're going to expire. So yeah, that's really foundational.
That's really foundational. Wow. Well, we only have like a minute and a half left. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you want to say? And also tell everybody the best way that they can follow you or find you.
Well, my biggest suggestion with meditation is, first of all, release expectation, find the kind that works for you, and then just keep at it because it's a practice. It's not meditation perfection. And you can find me on my website or my Instagram handle where I'm most active. They are one and the same as far as link and handle. It's Sarah Webb Says, SaraWebbSays. So it's SarahWebbSays.com or on Instagram at SarahWebbSays. I put out lots of free information there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I was going to ask you. Oh, thank you. You have videos and stuff on your Instagram, right? So if people want to like,
lots of reels.
That's what they're, reels. I should know this, reels. That people can follow. And do you have some examples of the breath work and stuff on there? If people are like hearing this and they're like, I want to know what that is. What does that look like?
They might have to dig. It's probably been six or seven. I put out one every other day or something like that. I talk about a lot of different things, but meditation is my jam. And yeah, breath work is a really big component of that. We've got to breathe, right?
Yeah, we got to breathe. Well, thank you, Sarah, so much for joining me today. It was such a pleasure having you. And thank you guys for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. And of course, as always, I'm wishing everyone a wonderful week filled with joy, abundance, and love. Peace.